afternoon, Nevada shooters. It is Saturday, October 31st, 3:07.
Beautiful Saturday.
It is. Gorgeous day today. Halloween.
Yeah.
Halloween. You going trick-or-treating?
No, I'm providing security for the church's Halloween event.
Are you really?
Yeah.
We're having the annual Halloween bash.
I'll swing by afterward.
The Underhill House. What time?
I don't know. I think...
We're starting at like 5.
I think ours ends at like 7:30 or 8.
Oh, we'll still be there.
I know.
Yeah, it's an annual thing. It's pretty cool.
I'll come by and hang out.
But it is a gorgeous day today. We've got lots to talk about today. I got to tell you, I'm feeling rejuvenated. The wife and I took a little staycation.
That I interrupted several times?
That you did interrupt several times, yeah. I tell you, it was an awesome 2 days. I'm not going to say what the casino was or the spa we went to, but it rhymes with Schmidt Mantis. It's rated one of the top, it's the top 10, it's in the top 10 spas in the world.
It's like a five diamond.
It is.
Isn't it, or whatever it is.
It is. Yeah. And the hotel is, the casino in the hotel is rated the number one casino in the state of Nevada outside of Las Vegas.
But they're still anti-gun.
It was not a gun-free zone.
Oh, I know. It isn't when I'm there either, but they still don't like guns.
They don't.
I'm just pointing
it out.
It's
not posted, though.
I'm just pointing it out that you spent money at an anti-gun establishment. Do you feel bad?
I don't care. It was awesome because the massage was incredible. Oh, my God. It was a great, great 2 days. Let me tell you, I needed that.
Yeah.
It was just you land there, just one day of total relaxation. I don't have to worry about anything.
I'm happy for you.
Yep. And then you get back to the world and it's...
I know.
You know,
tell
everything just falls down around your shoulders again. The truck is back in the shop all week this week. I haven't had it.
Sorry.
So if anybody knows anything about diesel engines.
I hate cars.
You know, they've replaced the rear main seal, the rocker box, valve cover gasket. I had to take it back because it was still leaking. So they replaced the oil dipstick tube. Now, they say it's not leaking, but for some reason it's building up overpressure in the motor. And
yeah.
It's finding the path of least resistance and it's dripping oil out.
So are you on the hunt for a new mechanic then?
Oh, no. My mechanic's great. He's a Ford guy, but they had to call in a guy from Ford.
Yeah.
To come take a look at it. He said, it's not leaking anymore, but, you know, why is it building up? You know, my truck's got high blood pressure. It's like father like son kind of a thing.
Hey, I've got a stranger sitting to my left. Who's here with us?
I'm not a stranger.
She is no stranger.
It is good to see you again.
Good morning.
We have Alicia Ketter. Alicia, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing awesome today.
I'm a little jealous of the Atlantis trip.
Are you?
Schmidt Mantis. Yes. I'm pretty jealous of that, actually.
It was a great day. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
Alicia is a fellow trainer, right?
Yeah.
You're a firearms trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And you
enthusiast.
Enthusiast.
Yep.
And a gigantic patriot and Second Amendment
right.
Proponent. And you've got some, you got a special hookup, didn't you?
Yeah.
Recently.
I'm pretty excited about this, actually. So, you know, for a while I've been an instructor here at the Women's Shooting Academy in Reno, mm-hmm. and that's just a fantastic gig. And
who we love.
Yes. Love them. Love them. Last year I started my own company, Legacy Defense Systems, and that's been really cool too. But this one I'm super excited about. Just in the last few months, I kind of have hooked up with some people at Team Never Quit. And Team Never Quit, if you don't know who they are, the face of them is kind of Marcus Luttrell.
Right.
Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
And Taya Kyle, and there's a bunch of really cool people involved in this. But what's been so exciting for me is to really get behind the scenes with these people and realize that this is more than just those faces. What they are out to do is build a community of people who are dedicated to supporting our veterans while they're abroad, when they come home, helping them adjust, mm-hmm. supporting their families. But the whole idea behind Team Never Quit is we are all the team. Each of us is that American spirit that says we are not going to quit, mm-hmm. in the face of adversity. So,
right.
You know, really the philosophy is it's the stay at home mom who's struggling every day to be there for her family and do the right thing. It's the father who's lost his job and is out there just pounding the bricks trying to support them. It's, you know, the cancer survivors, it's all of us, with that burning desire to just never quit. And to me, that's so cool because it's so much bigger than any one product that they put out.
And it's that same spirit that Marcus, you know, displayed throughout Buds, throughout SEAL training. And then of course, you know, through his time in Afghanistan. And, that's an awesome thing. You've brought some ammo in there. They're about ammunition, aren't they?
Well,
among other things.
Yeah, I mean, among other things, we have a whole suite of products. So Team Never Quit has a whole suite of ammunition from self-defense ammunition, hunting ammunition. But what I brought you today is the frangible ammunition, and this is their training ammo, although they have frangible defensive ammo too. The training ammunition is so cool because it allows us to have CQB sort of close quarter training on steel or in hardened environments that we couldn't do before because of ricochet or, you know, frag coming back at us. So traditionally we've been shooting steel at 20, 30, 40 feet away so that we weren't injured by that stuff coming back off the steel. This frangible ammunition is designed to literally turn to powder on impact. So when it hits a surface that's harder than itself, so like steel, it literally just turns to powder. And so when we took it out and tested it, we were walking up within 18 inches of steel with .223 ammunition,
That's
which is pretty crazy.
Holy cow.
And the only reason I stopped, I could have got closer, the only reason I stopped is because I was damaging my steel. With the 9mm, we were within 8 inches and not having frag back.
You know, that's awesome because depending on the steel you use, and if you're using good steel, I mean, a lot of people, you know, that go out just to weekend shooters, or if they're shooting steel, it's garbage steel. It's not set up properly.
Right.
But, you know, that's incredible because minimum, depending on the steel you're using, if it's good steel, minimum rated distance for safety, I think, is on a rifle is 75 yards.
Yeah, something
I believe.
Like that.
I mean, it's a great distance. And now you can, you know, with this, you can get 18 inches from the steel.
Right. Well,
now you can train at a realistic, you know, 10, 20 feet.
Exactly.
Right. And, you know, we say as instructors, you know, train like you fight, right? And if I'm going to go, you know, through my house or you know, walking around with a defensive rifle in a defensive situation, I'm not going to be thinking, am I 75 yards away? You know, I'm going to shoot where I need to shoot. And so we need to be able to get into those scenarios that are more realistic.
Well, and you're going to mount that rifle and you're going to shoot much differently at 75 yards because you're having to concentrate on sights or you're having to work sights and optics.
Yep.
You're going to shoot much differently from that distance than you are from a realistic up-close distance where both eyes open, flash sight picture, or you're just getting that red dot, you know, on where you want to hit. So this ammunition is a tremendous answer to training. I mean,
that's
how many
cool.
times have we had students out there that got bit by a brass jacket?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's kind of what the impetus was for Marcus Luttrell. He's out there training with the Navy SEALs, and they're training, you know, for real-life stuff. And they're getting closer to the steel than maybe you and I were. And one of his teammates was injured by frag and not in a great place.
Yeah, we talked about that off mic where he was hitting the no-no zone, as my kids call it.
Yeah.
The least favorite place you want to get hit.
Exactly. Oh, so you want to talk about a motivator for finding a better solution. And really that's kind of what Marcus's drive was for that. And so he went out and said, what can we do that we can train more realistically? And he found centerfire. And centerfire is the bullet maker. And they've been around for a long time. The technology's been around for a long time. It's not anything new.
Yeah.
But what is new is really what Team Never Quit stands for and what they're doing with their suite of products.
Well, you brought a couple of boxes in. Thank you so much. I can't wait.
For sure.
Ben, you and I are going to have to do a video.
Yeah, we are.
Using this ammo. But the .223 round even looks different. I mean, I'm looking at one right now, and the primer is—it's not your typical copper.
Dark colored.
It's dark. It's not your typical copper colored primer. It's a black primer. The round is not brass jacketed. It's copper jacketed. The tip is even different, and you'll notice that probably about maybe a half inch down from the neck of the case. It appears to be a different material, or it's finished differently than the rest of the case is. So I can't wait to get this out
and
try
it. You know, let me just correct you. If you look closely, those are not copper jacketed. If you look closely, what that is a centered bullet. So the way that I like to explain it is if you were to take this room and you fill it full of basketballs, okay, and you consider those sort of the copper molecules, right? And then you have space in between those basketballs. Mm-hmm. Then you pour in a whole bunch of golf balls or ping pong balls, and it's going to fill up that space. Well, that's the tin, right? And so what they do is they center, essentially they bake at high temperatures that copper and those tin molecules together to make a solid projectile. So then if you think, when it hits the steel, it's similar to like if you were going to shoot a sugar cube against a wall, right? It's solid till it hits that wall, and then it disintegrates back into particles.
So this is a solid projectile. It's not jacketed.
Nope. It is a solid projectile that then turns to dust.
Wow.
Which is fantastic.
All right. I want to go out and play.
I am thrilled. I can't wait to take this out and shoot it.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So where can we buy this locally yet?
You can, absolutely. So you can buy it at Cabela's. It's on the store shelves right now. They're defensive ammo, so they have frangible defensive hollow point ammo, which is really cool. We shot that as well.
Okay.
And that what's really cool about that is there's some videos online. You can check those out. But you can look at the gelatin that they shot, the gel blocks, and you can see the frangible wound pattern the ammo works the same way. It just kind of splits off, and it creates a whole bunch of wound channels rather than a single wound channel from a single projectile. So it has a completely different stopping power. But the other place you can get this locally is you can get it from Axelson Tactical, and they are just a fantastic company. The Axelson family is Matt Axelson, who was part of Marcus's team when he went over to
Let me interrupt you right there. We're going to go to a break here real quick. I want to talk again about the defensive ammo when we get back. We're going to be back after this break. You're listening to Ben and Gary and Alicia Ketter on Armed Nevada Radio, KNews 107.3 FM. All right, you're back with Ben, Gary, and Alicia Ketter on KNews 107.3 Armed Nevada Radio. And we're talking about Team Never Quit. And I'm intrigued, as I'm sure you are, Ben, because you were mentioning, Alicia, this defensive ammo, the hollow point that they make. And it's a frangible hollow point.
Right.
Which answers a really cool question about, because now I think it's going to maybe intrigue schools.
Right.
Where they're talking about and debating having armed people in a school, because now you don't have to worry about ricochets.
Right.
But my big question is with this defensive ammo is how does it perform as far as kinetic energy, as far as when you're aiming high center chest, those big blood bearing organs, what's the kinetic energy like? What's the wound pattern like?
Yeah, well, to give you all the specifics, I would direct you to Snake River Shooting Products, who is the company that produces it, and all of their product sheets are online. You can find all the data. It's been put through all the FBI tests and has passed all of those rigors. But you're right. One of the biggest markets right now is law enforcement security agencies mm-hmm. who have to guard or protect hardened environments. So like here in Reno, a lot of our schools, because of our environment and where we are at, a lot of our schools are made out of sort of cement and cinder block, right? And if you were to have an active shooter and police respond in that environment, the chances of having, collateral damage from ricochets is pretty high. And so they're really interested in this defensive ammo in those environments because of the reduced ricochet. But if the defensive ammo were to hit a target, a perpetrator, somebody, an assailant, it produces a really unique and pretty devastating wound channel, right? So when the bullet hits the target, it fragments out. So you have a whole bunch of wound channels, which is pretty nasty compared to a single handgun round, which generally has a wound channel and creates damage as it goes through, mm-hmm. but usually will exit. So the frag really does a lot of devastation.
So some of the frangible ammunition that's been out on the market prior to this looked really good in the ballistic gelatin, but like when it got subjected to the four layers of denim, mm-hmm. that it basically wouldn't make it through.
Right.
How does this perform compared to some of those older products?
That's a great question. So like I said, it's been through all the FBI testing, and mm-hmm. that is what we did as well. So light clothing, heavy clothing, and all of that stuff. And it performed flawlessly in all of those areas with the exception of one, and that is against automobile glass because of the nature of the hardened glass or finish, however that's made.
Right.
It doesn't penetrate that well. So it's a consideration for law enforcement. So maybe it's not the duty ammo that the patrolman is going to be using, but maybe it is for the resource officer who's going to be out of school.
I was going to say for the school resource officer or school – well, not school police necessarily because they're mobile – but, yeah, for the school resource officer that's assigned to that facility.
Hospital security guards, people who are in, prisons or hardened environments where they need to have something like that, and they know that automobile glass is not going to be the challenge. Or maybe it is, but the risk is so low it's worth, them investing in that.
That's huge.
So what's the other consideration is what's for the self-defense ammunition, what's the cost difference? So, like, I'm a Gold Dot devotee, and that's pretty much all I carry. I want to say it's like, $23 a box for 20?
Yeah.
What's the cost on this stuff?
Well, that's kind of the beauty of this product, right? Is this is the first time this technology has been available at the same price point as Bolt Dot.
Wow.
So when I was at a major retailer here in Reno, just the other day, kind of comparing prices, it was exactly the same price. This Team Never Quit ammunition was exactly the same price as the top two defensive ammos that were sitting right next to it.
Nice.
That's big.
That is big.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I would have expected the opposite. I would have expected this to be, you know,
way more expensive.
Exactly.
Well, and in the past, frangible ammunition, you know, I'm trying to think of the brand. It was a failed brand, I thought. Yeah. 3 or 4 years ago, I mean, they were selling it for like $30 or $40 a box.
Right.
And I don't think it performed all that well when the rubber met the road.
Right.
So for the training ammunition, what's the cost on that compared to, say, like a Winchester white box or a box of Federal that you'll see at like Walmart for $25 or $30?
Well, this training ammunition is going to cost you a little bit more than your, you know, bulk ball ammunition that you're going to go out and just throw hundreds of rounds because it's specialized and it's for a specific thing, right? So you're gonna stock up for a class. If you're doing a CQB class or if you're shooting on steel a lot, then this is a choice. But really, it's not that much more per round. In fact, I did some comparison the other day, and it's really negligible. If this is what you need, it's totally affordable.
Well, and that's a good thing to point out is that it's maybe more specialized, that it isn't meant to replace the bulk box that we go buy at Battleborn Ammunition or Titan Ammunition here in town.
Yeah.
That this would be, if we're going to do one of those, you know, CQB classes with Gary or with you guys at Women's Shooting Academy, that, you know, we may stock up for that event and then just keep our ball ammunition for when we're doing stuff on our own or less specialized.
Because steel is a big part of my training regimen. So to have this for rifle and reduce the likelihood of somebody getting bit, plus be able to train at realistic distances, and that's a gigantic development.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, if you wanted to go look at the rest of the products that Snake River is producing, we have reloading ammo or reloading brass, and we have powder. We distribute Maker bullets. You know, we do all kinds of stuff. So, but we also have hunting ammunition. We have some just fantastic hunting stuff that's performed really well this year. In fact, another instructor here took down a huge buck with 300 blackout that's T&Q ammo, you know, it's performing really, really well. And he did that with an Axelson rifle, so we're pretty stoked about that.
We went to the break, you had mentioned Axelson Tactical. So kind of fill us in. What's the relationship or...
Yeah, so we're pretty excited about this. I've been a huge fan and friends of the Axelson family for a little while now, and I'm just privileged to know them as people, just salt of the earth, amazing people. But they are here in Minden, Axelson is Matt Axelson's family, and Matt Axelson was part of Operation Red Wings Marcus Luttrell. So Marcus being the only one who came out alive. So Matt lost his life there. But his family started this company really as a tribute to him and a way to give back to the Special Forces community and the veterans as a whole. But they have a line of rifles that are just phenomenal. They've been tested by some of the best snipers in the world, the best shooters in the world, and they just come back with rave reviews.
Wow.
In fact, they gave us, the Women's Shooting Academy, they gave us two of their rifles for our women, and every time women pick them up, they say, I want this rifle. We did a tactical carbine class last week, and our ladies were like, how can I buy that rifle?
You didn't bring us one?
I wish I could. I wish I could. But you're welcome to come hang out with us and shoot the ones that they gave us.
I've actually been wanting to do that. I got to talk to Vicky. I want to come out there and
absolutely
be the one guy in a class full
of
women.
But we've teamed up with Axelson Tactical because they have this same Team Never Quit mentality, right? That we are a community of people who love our veterans, love each other, love our country. And in addition to that, we've teamed up with SEAL One. We've teamed up with Reaper Outdoors, who is Ron Bellin, who is retired Navy SEAL, Master Chief. It's just some incredible people. But Axelson's here local, and we love them. And so you can get the ammo through them, rifles through them.
Awesome. So they're in Minden?
They are.
All right. So for our Carson City people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll usually see them. They've been out to a couple of gun shows. I ran into them at one gun show at the convention center about a year ago. But they usually do the gun show circuit once in a while. And I know Matt has a line of knives, combat knives that his family produces now that I've been dying to get my hands on.
Well, you know, their knife, I believe, is presented to the top of the class when they graduate BUDS.
Oh, wow.
So the top graduate receives one of the Axelson knives.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, we're going to be up against a break here in just a second. We will be back when we are. I want to talk about a development regarding training, realistic training versus, okay, air quotes, qualification as training, something that's come up this week that I haven't told you about yet. But we will be back right after this break. You're listening to Ben and Gary and Alicia Ketter on KNews 107.3 FM, Armed Nevada Radio. All right, we're back. You listen to Armed Nevada Radio with Ben and Gary and Alicia Ketter. I've been having a conversation this week with a deputy from a local sheriff's office.
Okay.
And she's asking me if I wouldn't mind holding a class for her and several other deputies with their agency.
Okay.
Because their agency has a new training program now for firearms.
Okay.
And I'm using the term training very loosely.
All right.
I got a copy of the training curriculum for live fire, and as qualification, it barely passes that standard. And she's telling me that a lot of the deputies are having issues with, they're firing from 25 yards prone, offhand, support hand. You know, that's just not realistic.
No.
From a law enforcement training standpoint. And
wow,
she's saying that little deputies are having a big, they're actually worried that they're not going to pass.
Yeah.
And I follow her on Facebook, and she posted a picture of her target. And they're shooting on good training targets.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, my grouping is terrible. And I'm looking at her grouping, and it's about from the bottom of the throat here,
okay,
to about midsection. And
well, so it's
about nipple to nipple.
All right. Well, so it's a good.
So I'm like, what's wrong with that? No, right. I need to tighten that up, she says. I go, why?
A hit is a hit.
That's not, yeah, any hit that you place on the bad guy,
right,
that significantly affects his ability to continue to remain room, you know, other than room temperature,
right,
is a good hit. So I'm not going to mention the agency because I don't want to bash their instructor, but clearly,
yeah,
their training is very lax.
What made them change to that, or didn't change, it's just what's been happening?
I think it's what's just been happening. Oh, and this came up too in the conversation. Their department will not pay for them to go to outside training, so they're having to do it on their own.
Yeah. You know, Gary, I just a couple months ago, I spent a week in Coalinga, California with Travis Haley.
Yeah.
And doing
a little jealous of that trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was brutal. It was amazing but brutal.
Yeah.
If you ever get the chance, train with him. But we did 3 days handgun and then 3 days carbine. And 90% of the class were police officers, mostly SWAT officers and special teams. But every one of them there was there on their own dime. Every one of them,
yeah,
paid for that training. And in talking to them, you know, I kind of jokingly said, you know, cops are the worst. They come to us with no training. And every one of the cops there agreed with me and said, we don't get the training that we need. And we have to pay for the outside training.
I never did. When I was on the job still, when I,
yeah,
was with Carson Sheriff's Office, they never sent us to training.
Well, and
every
what?
Time we put in for it, it was denied. We don't have the money. We don't have the money. It was always the money.
Mm-hmm. You know what boils my blood, though, is that the media and the general public elevates cops as these super gun handlers.
Right.
They're not.
And that we're somehow inferior because we don't carry,
right,
a badge.
Right.
And it's the opposite. All of us, I think, take it,
yeah,
very seriously. Because, you know, we don't enjoy the same indemnity that they do. And so we have to train to get it right,
right
every time.
There is a very small segment of law enforcement officers that go out and train on their own. And I mean seriously train, not just go punch holes in paper.
Right.
That go out and seriously train. But it's a very small segment of that community.
It's their craft. They should all be
training.
They
should.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you I've seen some of the worst shooters that I've had out there have been law enforcement.
Wow.
And it's not a blanket statement of all law enforcement because they're tremendous, courageous professionals.
Right.
But they pick up their gun once every 6 months. And I'll tell you from my experience.
And they develop bad habits.
Even when I was with the Phoenix Police Department,
yeah,
training was a static range. You plant your feet in concrete from the 25-yard line, draw and fire five rounds on the is a foot line ready.
You want to know what's crazy, though, about that? That's a simplistic way to train. But I have a few friends in some other departments who, you know, we've talked to about some other officers/deputies/troopers that,
mm-hmm,
may not be qualified for their job.
Yes.
And a lot of these officers are having trouble qualifying with that simplistic training. What? I mean, that's insanity.
Well, I'm in conversation with this deputy. I'm hoping to get them out. You know, I'm working with them on price because I don't want to gouge these guys because they really need the training.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just something they want to come out and do and play for a day.
Right.
They really need it. So I'm hoping we can hook something up with them because as far as I know, and Alicia, maybe you can correct me on this, I don't know in our community if there are any other NRA law enforcement division firearms instructors out here.
No, there's a few post-certified instructors, but really there's just nothing for them.
Right, but they're teaching strictly for their agency. They can't go because of liability. Yeah. Those guys can't go outside the agency and
teach.
Right.
Well, and you know, this is how bad it was when I was in Coalinga. We actually had a guy from Washoe County's Hasty team went to Coalinga, which is, you know, a six-hour drive from here, and paid a tremendous amount of money to get additional training.
Good for him.
So he went to another state, right,
good
and paid
him.
Out of his own pocket. Absolutely. I give these guys total credit.
Yeah.
But they're the minority. And, you know, like you said, and you know, back to what you said, Ben, the society at large wants us to put our faith in our law enforcement. And believe me, I have the utmost respect and gratitude for what they do. But not only do they not have the training and the resources, but they don't have the obligation to protect us either under Supreme Court ruling.
Right.
So, you know, that's to me, that's a really scary thing. And as a firearms instructor, when I see them come in just not qualified to where they should be or where I want them to be as somebody who's protecting me, you know, that's I think we've let them down and we've let ourselves down and we have an unrealistic expectation of what they deliver.
And this is actually a good segue to my story from last night. So I got stopped by a Nevada Highway Patrolman.
You know, that was only a matter of time coming with that rocket sled of a car you're driving.
Well, but
I told you that was going to happen.
You know, all right. So second time in less than a year I've dealt with these guys. So, but it was actually interesting the compare and contrast between, I would say, the trooper that I interacted with last December. She was not qualified to do her job.
I would agree with
that. And the way she handled herself, you could tell she was not comfortable with an armed citizen because I don't believe she was comfortable with her own firearm skills.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy walks up to the window and cool, calm, and collected, looks in the car, looks at me, asks me if I have my license, registration, proof of insurance. I said yes. I informed him as to where they were, and I kept my hands where I could see him. He asked, are there any weapons in the car? I said yes. There's a firearm on my hip. And he goes, great. Now, reach for your license in your front pocket. That was it. That was the only... This guy was...
And that is the great majority of cops out there.
Oh, for sure.
Your example from December is a
horrible one.
Yeah, that was...
But I think...
That was a crapshoot.
But honestly, I think the difference in the way those troopers handled themselves...
Mm-hmm.
And a huge shout-out to this trooper last night. He was absolutely professional. He handled himself like somebody that was dedicated to defending the Constitution and revering the rights of citizens. But he was completely confident and comfortable. And never once, you know, I handled myself the exact same way between those two stops. And I think the confidence that was displayed was because they were there was different levels of confidence in their own skills.
But in the end, he still scratched you a sight.
He did.
All right. So you got cited for what?
10 over.
What being? Were you doing what and
50 and a 40.
50 and a 40. What were you really doing?
Well, we'll wait till the criminal case gets handled.
So I saw you post that this morning. I go, 50 and a 40? I go, no, that's just what he cited you for.
Well.
That's not what you were doing.
We'll see what happens.
So he cut your break.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, that makes it a little easier.
So first speeding ticket I've ever gotten in my life. Pretty good, right? Yeah, but he was a professional.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I moved here from California, which has a very different mentality with law enforcement and firearms. When I moved here, I remember one of the first things happened. I was at a stoplight over by Renown Hospital, and a Sparks PD officer pulled up next to me, and he says, he tells me to roll down my window. I have a gun sticker on the back of my truck. He tells me to roll down my window. I do, and he goes, hey, I just wanted to tell you I appreciate that you're carrying a firearm. And I was like, what?
Wow, really?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm an instructor, and I do everything I can to arm citizens here in Nevada. He said, I appreciate that. He said, we need all the help that we can get.
Well, holy cow.
But you know what? That's my
awesome
experience with Sparks PD's PIO. When I talked to him, you know, he said the same thing. He's like, you know what? I support and defend the Constitution, and part of that is you guys have the right to bear arms, and as long as you're being responsible with that right, I have no issues.
We
with
have
it.
Some great law enforcement in this town.
I agree.
Reno PD's public information officer, Tim Broadway, is also he's a buddy of mine. He's also a great guy, tremendous supporter of the citizens' right to carry arms. I can't say enough good about him and the guys at the Reno Police Department. I know several guys over there. One of them is a patrol sergeant who I actually used to work with as a deputy in Carson. And he's a former Oakland PD officer, and now he's with Reno. And he's a sergeant getting ready to retire here, I think, in another 2 years. But it'll be a great loss when he goes because he's an awesome cop.
We're coming up against a break. This is Armed Nevada Radio, 107.3 KNews.
All right, and we are back, getting ready to go into the home stretch here at Armed Nevada Radio. You're listening to Ben, Gary, and Alicia Ketter on 107.3 FM. And, Ben, you've got a video for – I haven't seen this. I've heard about it. Well, I take that back. I've listened to about the first couple seconds.
Well, so there's a series of commercials the NRA has been doing. One of them was with Marcus Luttrell. And
right, I saw that one.
It's guys talking about their rights to defend themselves and why they take that right so seriously. And the latest one is the president of the NRA lashing out at Obama. Because, you know, the last, what would you say, month and a half, there's been all this rhetoric how the NRA is somehow a terrorist organization on the part of the liberals, and that became a big thing in the Democratic debate. And, you know, and I bristle at that because the NRA is not a terrorist organization. It's not a lobbying organization. It is the mouthpiece for over 5 million gun owners. It's the way that we have our voices heard collectively.
Right.
And they are the ones that are advocating for gun safety, gun education, and they're also advocating for our freedom. So anyways, this commercial that got put out, the first time I saw it was yesterday, so I'm assuming it was released sometime this week, is this president of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre. He is blasting back at Obama's assertion that we need more gun laws, that the NRA is part of the problem. And I think it's a great video. So, Sean, let's roll that video.
Thing illustrates America's breakdown, like the way the president's hometown celebrates its holidays. Memorial Day, 12 dead, 56 wounded. The 4th of July, 10 dead, 53 wounded. Labor Day, 9 dead, 46 wounded. This kind of third world carnage has become absolutely normal. If the president held a press conference every time multiple people were murdered by criminal gangbangers with illegal guns in Chicago, we'd hear from him almost every day. Instead, he says nothing. And the untold secret in Washington is that he has all the laws he needs to stop the bloodshed now. Under the existing federal gun laws, he could take every felon with a gun, drug dealer with a gun, and criminal gangbanger with a gun off the streets tomorrow and lock them up for 5 years or more. But he won't do it. His Justice Department won't do it. And the media never ask why. So convicted gangbangers carry illegal guns because they fear rival gangs more than they fear being prosecuted for a gun charge. Every police officer on the streets in cities like Chicago, Baltimore, and Detroit knows what it's like to get called to a murder scene knowing full well who did it because the killer was in the back of their car yesterday or last week. Thugs like Darius Brown, who was supposed to be serving a 10-year sentence for second-degree felony robbery, but got let off with 5 years probation. So he was free to roam the streets and kill a 9-year-old girl while she was doing her homework. If you want to stop violent crime...
So, yeah, the video makes my blood boil because it points out, you know, right after the Umpqua Community College shooting, Obama gets up and shames all legal gun owners that somehow yes. We bear some sort of responsibility for the depraved actions of this shooter at the college and all of the other shooters that have occurred. And nothing drives me crazier than him getting up and guilting and trying to shame all of us legal gun owners because of the actions of somebody that broke laws that are already on the books and in some cases committed perjury, got their guns illegally. You know, and then we have here Wayne LaPierre is pointing out that, you know, this Obama Justice Department is way more concerned with, you know, Darren Wilson, right? Mm-hmm. How much energy got wasted on that case?
Destroyed that young man's life.
Absolutely. Yeah. For something that he was exonerated
doing his
by.
Job.
And, you know, that's the thing that bothers me is that this Justice Department is concerned with all of these other, I think, superfluous things that are going on in our society today. And we're completely ignoring the fact that all of these things are happening. And, you know, and the other thing is, why are you shaming us for the statistical anomalies that are these mass shootings when every day in Chicago there is this black-on-black violence that needs to be addressed by the Justice Department or the White House?
I've been saying forever that, and it, many people agree, that it's not the gun. The gun's just a tool.
Right.
Well, we don't have a gun problem. What we have is a lack of respect for human life problem. We have a lack of respect for other people's rights. That's the issue. We people that are just randomly and sometimes intentionally, you know, just killing because that's the community they live in. There was a shooting just yesterday at a mall in Indianapolis.
Yep.
Three. I think that was a targeted shooting. That was what that
sounds
it
seemed
like
it.
But still, I bet you dollars to donuts the gun was legally obtained. So how do you stop that?
Well,
you don't.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to stop illegally obtained guns. I can't tell you how many stolen guns I've taken off the street in my career.
Well, and guns aren't the issue, right? No. It's criminals, and it's evil, and that's always existed in the world. You know, Cain killed Abel with a rock, and it's really a heart issue, not a tool issue. And you know, states like California are so backwards on this issue that things like high-capacity magazines are, or standard-capacity magazines, what we have here, all of us are carrying you know, standard capacity. That's a felony in California, but stealing a gun is no longer a felony in California.
I'll tell you this about the magazine. I just learned this. our instructor at the school I was at with Vegas Metro PD was a former – I'm trying to remember what city he worked in. He's a former Southern California law enforcement officer. He was a sergeant when he retired. And he told me that high-capacity pistol magazines, the legislation that was passed for those, that is an administrative code. Which means they don't enforce it. There is no penalty. If you get caught with a high-capacity pistol magazine in California, it's a no-go. I mean,
not
there's nothing
to push
they're
going to
– they can't enforce it. There's no penalty that's in the legislation. However, high-capacity rifle magazines, 30-round AR mag, well, that's a felony, Bubba.
Yep. But you can steal somebody's gun, and that's a misdemeanor.
Well, yeah, that was last year. Wasn't that last year that happened?
Right.
California just makes me my head want to explode. That, you know, the fact that we let these people off with warnings for things that should be jail time, and you know, and then they're going after all of us, you know, lawful gun owners. That I don't know. It just
Sean's biting his lip over here. He's got something. What do you got, Sean?
All right. So I told you guys about the story about a Breitbart yesterday. And here it is. Syracuse University's track reports recently revealed that Obama's tough talk on increasing prosecution of federal gun laws was just that. Talk. In fact, Obama's annual prosecution of gun crimes never reached levels of prosecutions seen during George W. Bush's last 5 years in office. Here's the stats. Track reports shows that prosecutions for gun violations actually began to decline in 2013. In fact, prosecutions in 2013 were lower than 2012. Gun crime prosecutions were even lower in 2014 and actually hit an all-time low for the Obama administration in 2015. For example, during fiscal year 2014, the Justice Department said the government obtained 20.3 weapons convictions for every 1 million people in the United States, and that dropped to 19.1 weapons convictions for 1 million people in the U.S. during fiscal year 2015. To put it another way, fiscal year 2015 represents a 15.5% drop in prosecutions from 5 years ago and a 34.8% drop from the midway point of Bush's 8 years in office.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Holy
you know what?
Smokes.
That should be a matter of congressional hearing, I think. Well, and, you know, look at Reno, for example. You know, the whole dust up between the U.S. Attorney's Office and the ATF that ended up all, you know, just about all of the ATF agents leaving town. And I think the only ATF agent assigned to Reno is based in San Francisco. You know, you want to talk about enforcing existing gun laws. Well, we don't even have that apparatus here in Reno.
Right.
So how in the world can you call for more gun control when as an administration and as a bureaucracy, you're not even enforcing existing gun laws, I think, for the most part in Reno?
Well, when you arrest an individual for possession of narcotics with the intent to deliver, or dealer, right, and he's in possession of a firearm, that's a federal gun crime.
Right.
I've arrested a lot of people for narcotics dealing with a firearm. You know how many federal prosecutions I've been able to put forward? Zero. None.
That should tell you something about our U.S. Attorney's Office and their dedication.
They're simply not prosecuting. And you're going to tell me that there's no agenda there? Come on.
Right.
I mean, that clearly there is an agenda. To what end? That scares me to death. But
man, I can't believe this hour is over already.
I know.
It goes by too fast every week.
Hey, I got to go pick up the keys for my classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw your classroom the other day. It's looking good.
Is
it?
Uh-huh. Oh, my God. I'm getting a big delivery of tables and chairs. We're going to get in there. Woo. I got to go pick up the keys today.
Nice.
So you can go. Right. Anyway, hey, it's been a great show. Alicia, I want to thank you for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's been a fun hour. I think we talked about a lot of really good stuff. Got some good info out there. We'll post this up on the Facebook page.
For sure.
And Ben, you want to go?
Yeah, let's.
All right. We're going to get out of here. Folks, stay safe, stay armed, stay vigilant, watch your backs.
Especially vigilant tonight.
Yes, especially tonight. Take care of your families, and we will see you next week on Armed Nevada Radio, KNews 107.3 FM. We're out.